From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
San Mateo.
San Francisco, Mission Dolores Park.
Financial District near the Tenderloin.
San Bruno.
North Sunnyvale.
Downtown Palo Alto, my beloved.
Redwood City.
Today, we're talking about the winding rivers that make up California's water hub, the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. We'll meet the people who live and work on the waterways.
The Delta is the most forgotten piece of real estate in the state of California.
We'll get a taste of the boating culture.
We're pretty much connected to the water. I'm here because of the river.
And we'll visit with a farm family that's worked the land for generations.
We ship corn and wheat, pears, our main crop, and wine grapes, and anything else we can think of.
Navigating the Delta, today on an extended edition of Cross Currents. If you follow the water from the San Francisco Bay back to its source, you'd head east and end up in an intricate web of waterways and islands that make up the California Delta. The Delta plays an incredibly important role in the state. The Sacramento and San Joaquin Rivers drain there, and with a system of dams and pumps built over the decades, it's become the center of California's water distribution system. Threatened and endangered fish species live in the Delta. Millions of acres of California farmland depend on the Delta. And nearly two-thirds of all Californians, including many here in the Bay Area, get their water from there. But life in the Delta is changing. Just last week, the drought forced state regulators to order a rare restriction on California farmers with century-old water rights. They told them to stop pumping water from the San Joaquin River.
Now, for the first time, the state is telling some farmers who for years have been able to use as much water as they want that they are cut off.
And an ongoing debate about the Bay Delta Conservation Plan has gotten even more heated. That's Governor Brown's proposal to build two huge tunnels under the Delta to deliver water to Central and Southern California. Amid all the debates and controversy are the people who live and work in the Delta. Reporter Lisa Morehouse created a series of stories about them, and we're going to hear them today. First, we'll get a tour with someone who travels the waterways every day on his boat, delivering mail.
Welcome to the Delta. It's going to get pretty choppy because the wind's supposed to kick up as we get on in the afternoon. We'll be fighting the tide all the way across and then all the way back home. So it'll be a bouncy ride. You'll have fun.
Rick Stelsreed is the only mailman in California who delivers by boat. Every week, every day except Sunday, he pulls out from a marina on King Island in the eastern part of the Delta near Stockton. He takes his 21-foot aluminum boat around 60 miles, visiting marinas and designated docks. At most stops, he just slows his boat. He picks up and drops off mail, then flips up the red metal flag.
You don't stop if you don't have to. Mostly everybody out here that I deliver mail to, most all of them have something to do with the river, whether it be farming, whether they live out here on boats. They may be caretaking an island,
running a marina or a sports fishing business or a restaurant. They might work in the region's abundant natural gas fields. In the summertime, there's an influx of people harvesting crops or working in packing sheds.
So my mail will change because migrant workers will come up and they'll still get the mail from Mexico or wherever they're from. I got a guy out in Mandeville Island. He's from Peru. He's a sheep herder out there.
And living in the Delta, where there are 57 islands and over 1,000 miles of waterways, just requires people to do things differently than in most of the Bay Area. That's really clear as we approach a stop where more than 30 people get their mail, even though there's no mailbox. It's a small bridge, and Stelsreed points out an attached safety cage where bridge tender Ramon Gonzalez is doing maintenance work. Gonzalez spots Stelsreed, climbs out of the cage and up the side of the bridge to fetch a bucket. Stelsreed labors to keep his boat in one place while reaching for the bucket Gonzalez lowers. It's filled with outgoing mail.
Okay, man, I'll see you tomorrow. Hasta mañana, huh?
It's choppy as we head out to a large body of water called Frank's Tract. We see Mount Diablo to the left and Antioch to the right, but barely. Stelsreed turns on his windshield wipers. He navigates through soupy fog and around dangerous obstacles in the water. This time of year, he's also got to keep an eye out for what appear to be supersized bales of hay.
That's what all these duck blinds. There's 8, 10, 12 of them across Frank's Tract.
Duck blinds that hunters pull their boats into for easy access to the Delta's waterfowl. In the summer, Stelsreed keeps an eye out for boaters racing or pulling water skiers. In the spring, he gets his most unusual packages. He's delivered plants, pheasants, and even swans. When he drops off mail at the home of an 82-year-old friend who lives on an island the size of a suburban house lot, I tell him the Delta reminds me of parts of the California desert where some people go to drop out of society to get lost.
I come out here to get lost. When I moved back out here in 96, that's why I came out here, just to get lost. I divorced and went through that change and just had to get away from it all. For me, it was all about cleaning up. I had been on pain medication, prescription pain medication for years and years and years. And I just really, for me, I lost my family, I lost my house, I had to shut my business down, I lost everything.
He moved to the Delta and realized life can be simple.
The beavers get along with the otters get along with the muskrats, birds get along, everybody seems to coexist really well. Why can't that be that way everywhere? So I just took it upon myself to fix me.
In 2006, he started helping out an elderly friend who had the mail route. Then he took it over full time.
Nobody here to sign for it. Gotta leave a notice.
When the deliveries are done, we head back into the marina at King Island, and Stelsreed looks satisfied as he tells me,
I'm out here forever now. I'm never gonna leave. I'll never leave this place. To me, this is about as close to God as you can get.
My ride with Rick Stelsreed only showed me part of the Delta, so I head west to cover more ground and water. Just outside the town of Rio Vista, there's a farmer's market and a big red barn. This, and a planned educational center and museum, is the brainchild of Ken Scheidegger.
The Delta is the most forgotten, misunderstood piece of real estate in the state of California. It started out that way back in 1850 because it was nothing more than marshland. No one wanted to go out there.
Until people realized that swarms of Gold Rush hopefuls needed to be fed. A mostly Chinese labor force built levees, creating permanent, rich farmland.
It's been divided up into a multitude of islands that are very excellent for producing a lot of crops we're dependent on. But you still can't see it.
So we get in Scheidegger's truck to rectify that a little. We cross the Sacramento River by bridge, a luxury considering his grandparents could only get to the neighboring islands by boat. Then on to Ryer and Grand Islands by car ferry. A century ago, he says, barges would transport people from island to island and riverboats would come up from the bay.
And they would bring with them food supplies or newspapers or whatever, postage stamps or whatever you needed here, because in a sense there was no other way of getting it.
Scheidegger wants people to think about how that isolation plays into the Delta's history and people, about what families had to do to develop this marshland into farms and build lives here.
We have to be careful about not developing or overcrowding this part of the world, that the old-timers here want to keep it like it was. But the other side of that coin is that a lot of the businesses that are now out here need a certain level of support.
We disembark, and Scheidegger points to the field stretching out beside us.
On this drive about 100 years ago, would look over to these fields and you would see that they were almost totally asparagus.
It was mostly Filipino farm workers who picked, packed, and shipped the asparagus all across the country. Chinese laborers founded a Chinese-only town. Families from Portugal and Italy started farms.
My grandparents came here in the 1890s. They were from Sweden.
The roads here are on the levees, pretty much the highest point of any Delta Island. While we make this bumpy ride, we look down at the water, where people fish out of boats or from the shore. We pass cornfields, pear orchards, and the increasingly popular vineyards. Scheidegger hopes Delta farmers can tap into the Bay Area's interest in local food to shore up the economy.
Defining what local means, make the pear taste better. And that can influence price. That can influence the resource of an area.
Up Highway 160, we drive parallel to the Sacramento River, cross bridges, and pass little towns. Outside Walnut Grove, we drive a little levee road up to a 100-year-old restaurant, Giusti's. An old neon sign reads, "Cocktails, dinners, boat landing, hunters and fishermen's paradise."
It may not look like it from the outside, but on what goes on in the inside, it's amazing.
How are you guys?
Good, how are you?
Good.
It's just 30 miles from Sacramento, close enough for politicians to hold power lunches here.
I would venture to say that there are more major decisions made on the Delta of California in this restaurant than you'll find anywhere else.
But Scheidegger says, aside from stalwarts like Giusti's, the Delta's businesses have taken a hit. He thinks that's in part because of the so-called water wars.
The focus now is so much on water.
And not for its beauty or for its boating or fishing, but for the controversy that surrounded water here for decades. And the tension now over the state's efforts to build two tunnels under the Delta to divert water across the state.
It's not saying that we're against that. We're just saying that there's so much else here to see. It hurts some of us when we spend our lives out here. We produce quality products or recreation or farm products. And then it's like, oh, you're out there in that swampland, and all you got out there is a lot of water, and everybody's fighting over it. And yeah, this little fish is endangered, or this is terrible.
He says he and his neighbors think the Delta is one of the most beautiful parts of California.
We have to open up the doors and let people come. When people start to think about the Delta in the future, I think it's in their best interest to make a trip out, see it, look at it, touch it, feel it.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hanat Baba. Today, we're talking about the people, history, and economy of the winding rivers that make up California's water hub, the Sacramento-San Joaquin Delta. Recreation is a big part of the economy and culture of this place. There are about 8 million visits to the Delta each year for activities like fishing, windsurfing, water skiing, and houseboating. The population just outside the Delta interior has grown significantly over the last 20 years. So it would make sense that the boating and fishing industries would have grown a lot too. But they haven't. Here's Lisa Morehouse.
It's 7 a.m. on a Tuesday morning, and a boat named Fishing Fool 4 pulls out of a private dock in the town of Isleton. It's loaded with poles and bait and four avid fishermen.
I'm Barry Cannavaro. I run fishhookers, sport fishing, half for 41 years. I'm a licensed captain with the Coast Guard. I live right here, right in Isleton.
We head down the Sacramento River, into the deep water channel, and under the Rio Vista Bridge, where big ships pass through to the port of Sacramento.
We're going to go down to what we call the power lines. The power lines area, which is down about 5 miles down the river here. And we're going to fish a combination of striped bass and sturgeon.
Today's cold water makes fish less likely to bite. But Cannavaro uses a sonar device called a fish finder to pick the most promising location.
Well, we're just getting baited up here, and we're on the Alco tides. Now we've got them all casted out.
and then they wait. Off the side of the boat, sturgeon jump like they're taunting us.
This is a waiting game. It's watching paint dry. Yeah.
It's hours of tedium broken up by moments of sheer panic.
Cannavaro comes from a fishing family. His grandfather, originally from Italy, was a commercial fisherman in nearby Pittsburgh before the salmon fishery dwindled in the 1950s.
We've been in every part of fishing that you can be in. We were manufacturers. We built tackle and sold tackle. And I go out commercially and get bait and to sell to the bait shops. So there isn't a part of the fishing that I haven't done.
In terms of leading fishing trips, Cannavaro says he's seen business go down starting about 10 years ago, and it's gotten a lot worse since the recession.
We used to work every day, and now, you know, you probably work, if you could do 4 days a week, we'd be happy.
If people are saving money, they'll do less recreational fishing. Then there's an added competition for business. Locals who lost their jobs who used to just fish for fun have started trying to get some fish guiding work, too.
And then the fish are not there like they used to be.
Scientists, conservationists, and state agencies say the fish population has been in decline for decades. That includes threatened and endangered salmon and smelt. Pollution and predator species could be the factors, but for decades, the conclusion of many studies and the opinion of the guys on this boat is that the diversion of fresh water out of the delta hurt fish, both at the pumps and because of the change in water flow. The first dams and canals went up in Northern California in the late 1930s. In the 60s, pumps opened in the South Delta to transport water to the California Aqueduct. Cannavaro and his neighbors are worried that the proposed tunnel project, which would start diverting water from the northern part of the delta, could hurt the fish population even more. And local businesses, from sport fishing guides like Cannavaro to hotels, early morning diners, bait shops, and gas stations, they all depend on customers who fish.
It was a fisherman's paradise in the past, and there's a lot less fish. So naturally, with less fish, there's less fishermen.
Candy Korth is sitting outside at the Pirate's Lair Marina, where the McCollumy and San Joaquin Rivers meet. This land has been in her family a long time. Her great-grandfather, originally from Portugal, moved to the Delta after trying his hand at mining during the gold rush. In the 30s, her grandmother and grandfather decided to farm and bought this undeveloped land at the end of the road.
He started establishing himself here by bringing out oil and gas and hay, and when he returned the next day, they were all stolen.
When it happened again, her grandmother said, "All we've got is a pirate's lair," and the name stuck. Korth says this land was tough for her family to farm, and they just happened into the boating industry.
My grandmother personally had a small demasted sailboat that she used to go out on the water herself,
which she would loan out for free to people looking to fish.
And finally, one day, one of the people that wanted to use it insisted on paying her and pressed a silver dollar into her hand. And the light bulb went off.
She convinced her husband to build more boats. Today, the Korth family runs several marinas in the Delta, serving people who love water recreation. People visit the cafe and gift shop in the summer and store boats here year-round for water skiing and fishing.
Another thing that boaters like to do is anchor out and or hang on the hook is the way they call it.
But Korth says business has been slow for marina owners lately. Her records show their gas sales went down 27% between 2007 and 2011, though it's starting to recover. And some people with smaller boats pulled them out of marina berths, storing them at home.
We've had vacancy levels that I've personally never seen in my lifetime.
Almost 25%. So the Korth family offered discounts and promotions, cut back on some capital improvements, and added things like Wi-Fi to stay attractive. Her family's opposed to the tunnels. Even though the state's plan includes water quality regulations, Korth is concerned that too much freshwater diversion will leave the water here too salty for the fish population. But she's not trying to be possessive about the water that drains into the Delta.
I never really think about the water in the Delta as being the Delta's water. It is the state's water. I completely agree. And I understand that a certain amount can be diverted without catastrophic harm, but there is a pressure to continue to divert and possibly to divert more.
Back out on the water, Barry Cannavaro shouts to a boat nearby.
Oh, pretty slow.
Yeah, we're going to go see if we can get a turnaround somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they did pretty good at off of Light 34 yesterday on the income.
It's a poignant reminder of how business has changed. That very boat was one of three Cannavaro used to own and operate his sport fishing business with. Now, he has just this one. And he leaves the Delta for a month or two each summer, leading fishing trips up the coast. People have paid Cannavaro to use his boat and expertise for other work. When prices for natural gas were higher, he'd take equipment and workers out to local gas fields. When the Antioch Bridge was under construction, he did the same there. I ask, with so many questions about the future of the Delta, what does he do to plan ahead?
I mean, what are you going to do?
Cannavaro's over 70, and he's hoping to cut back, but he's worried about the future of business on the water.
Of course, you know, I live on the water, and everybody that lives, all my neighbors are on the water. You know, we're pretty much connected to the water. I'm here because of the river. In my case, my family, you know, I'm planning to retire, and my son-in-law is going to take over. Is he going to have anything to take over? You know, is there anything left?
The findings of the state-based Delta Protection Commission seem to substantiate Cannavaro's concerns. Even though it predicts the population of a dozen counties around the Delta will grow by as much as 50% in the next 40 years, growth in boating recreation is not expected to keep pace.
Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. Today, our show is about the California Delta, the region just to the east of the Bay Area between Sacramento and Stockton. Major California rivers drain there, and over decades of building dams and reservoirs and pumps, it's become the major hub of California's water system. But it's not just the water flow that's been transformed there. This land used to be made up of tidal wetlands and marshes of tule grass. Today, there are nearly 60 islands surrounded by levees. Most of the land is used for farming, and it's some of the richest farmland in the state. Lisa Morehouse takes us to meet two people whose families have deep roots in Delta agriculture.
I'm driving down a long road on Andrus Island in the Central Delta, headed for Kay Dix Farm. It's home to pear orchards, a packing shed, a business office, and some truck storage. The man in charge here is Daniel Wilson, whose family's farmed the Delta for generations. Wilson lives just down the road in a house built by his grandfather almost 100 years ago.
Now, we're going to take you into an orchard, and we're going to show you kind of different stages of growth.
We walk past the packing facility. It's quiet now, but in summer it buzzes with machines and people, washing, treating, and separating pears by size, wrapping them in tissue so the delicate fruit can withstand being shipped across the country. They grow several thousand tons of pears each year.
These are Bartlett pears. This was the entire river 30 years ago. Every single tree was this 30 years ago.
The winter orchard is filled with Medusa-like pear trees.
We've now diversified away from these trees, and we've gotten other varieties.
Using an age-old practice, they've grafted a pear called Stark Crimson onto stumps of old Bartlett trees because, Wilson says, new varietals can bring in almost twice as much as Bartlett pears right now.
One could argue we've diversified away from these so much that we're starting to go, oops, went too far. But that's farming. You change varieties, you try to see what's profitable.
Pears were one of the first commercial crops in the Delta.
I have trees next to my house. You can see those trees in the distance that are 130, 140 years old. Grandpa plants five different types of fruit, and the pears are the one that lived.
Why have people grown pears and other crops here for so long?
It's nice soil, it's rich in nutrients, and, you know, it's close to population centers back in the day.
Back in the days of the gold rush. Many of the most successful people of the time weren't miners, but were instead the ones who sold food and supplies to the miners, says Wilson.
You wanted to be the guy selling the shovel, not the guy digging with the shovel.
While miners sought their fortunes in the hills, the state encouraged farmers to come to the Delta and basically turn part-time swampland into full-time farmland by building levees. That's how this area came to be what it is today.
So back in the 1850s, they passed the Arkansas Swamp and Reclamation Act, and they said, state, we'll give you this land here in these marshes in Arkansas and California if you give them to people and the people build levees around it and reclaim the land and turn it into productive farmland, then they can keep it. And that's when these reclamation districts are formed, and the local farmers built the levees and kept the water back, and that's how agriculture developed in the Delta.
Agricultural infrastructure looked pretty different back then. In the 1920s and 30s, when fruit growing really picked up, Wilson says farmers here would take pears across the island to the Sacramento River, which is about a mile away.
They would load the fruit onto a schooner, and the schooner would pick up at various farms, and then it would turn around and head back down to San Francisco.
Labor was different, too. Today, most of the crews Wilson hires to pick and pack pears are Latino.
When I was a kid, every pear crew that worked around here was from the Philippines.
Filipinos were essential to Delta agriculture and were most famously linked with the asparagus crop. I drive over to a former labor camp on nearby Twitchell Island with 93-year-old Nicholas Cataño. He knows the history of Filipinos in the Delta firsthand.
This is practically all asparagus. All these fields right in here.
Cataño's Portuguese mother met his Filipino father on a plantation in Hawaii, where Cataño was born. When his paternal grandfather found better work in California, most of the family came here, including a one-year-old Nicholas. His family farmed and became labor contractors.
I supervise these fields here, yeah, as a labor contractor. Here's a packing shed right here. He still has the machinery in there.
After showing me the field, Cataño directs me to his home, which sits atop a levee. It's stuffed with neatly hung, perfectly pressed clothes and fishing poles and old photographs.
I got a picture in there I want to show you if you had time to look at it, though.
One posed portrait shows well over 100 people, almost all young men. It was taken at a large gathering of Filipinos in Los Angeles.
These are all farmers and farm laborers in the Delta.
And they're dressed to the nines in fine suits. Most Filipinos in the Delta were men. In fact, the only women and children in the image belonged to Cataño's family, due in large part to his father's position as a labor contractor.
We had a lot of men. You know, they all came from all over, you know, from the Philippines, from the Hawaiian Islands, you know, from wherever they were urged to come here.
Cataño says his father organized crews of Filipino workers to move around the state, harvesting different crops. In the Delta, cutting asparagus, which they called grass, was back-breaking work.
And they would cut more or less about 4 acres each, 4 acres a day apiece, which was almost impossible to do. You had to have 2 or 3 knives all sharp all the time, you know, stone in your hand, always sharpening your knives.
And workers would place the hand-picked asparagus onto sleds pulled by horses. There's still some asparagus grown in the Delta, but for the last couple decades, cheaper asparagus, imported from Mexico, has made many farmers here turn to other crops that make a higher profit and require less labor. Now, many of the fields that grew asparagus hold corn, alfalfa, and other crops that need just a combine and one driver for 100 acres. Daniel Wilson's one of those farmers. He gave up growing asparagus years ago, but he runs part of his business in a building connected to the crop's history in the Delta.
This facility you see hanging out over the water started its life as a Southern Pacific Railroad packing shed, or produce, by the way, for asparagus in specific. They would pack the asparagus and the entire river would be covered with asparagus butts.
Now it's a grain elevator, one of his family's many business endeavors. Along with farming and grain storage, they're in the transportation business, too.
We ship corn and wheat and various grains out of here in our trucking business. We also ship pears, our main crop, and wine grapes and olives and anything else we can think of. But those are our main products. Did I miss any? So those are our main things we haul out of the Delta.
It's all part of being a successful farming family, not depending solely on pears.
Any crop that you're totally devoted to makes you a little vulnerable to if the pears go bad, which they have in the late 40s and the 80s and times like that, then you want to diversify into other things.
Along with diversifying, farmers around the Delta are trying other strategies to stay viable. There's a huge farmers market at the intersection of two major highways, and it's filled with Delta wine and produce and stories about the farmers. Local businesses hand out tour maps for visitors to drive up the river and visit local farms along the way. Like Wilson, they want to keep farming here.
We have pretty deep roots here. We farm here because we can make good money, and we like the area. I'm sure if you talk to a farmer in Dinuba or one in Oroville, they'd tell you the same thing. The dad farmed here and grandpa farmed here, and so I'm farming here.
Wilson's children and nephews work for him, and he sees neighbors' kids still involved, especially on the business side of farming. He says there's not a lot of big ag here. Though he sees the number of owners getting smaller and their operations getting bigger, Wilson says there are few, if any, widely held corporations involved in farming in the Delta.
It's a complicated area to survive in. You have to take care of the levees. You have to take care of the drainage. We're regulated much more heavily than a lot of other areas.
Every farmer I talk to in the Delta has concerns about the state's proposed Bay Delta Conservation Plan, which would build tunnels at the north end of the Delta to ship water across the state. They have questions about how much farmland would be lost to tunnel construction and wetland restoration, and about the quality of the Delta water. Daniel Wilson shares these concerns, but in the meantime, he's sticking to what his family's done for over a century.
I love to farm. I like this area. I like to grow things. So if we can figure out how to make money doing something we love to do, then we've got our questions answered.
In the Delta, I'm Lisa Morehouse for Cross Currents.
Tell us about a community you think we should cover. Email us at news@klw.org or find us on Facebook and Twitter at KALW. Thanks to you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. You keep us flowing. Our team includes Leela Day, Jeremy Dalmas, Jack Detch, Audrey Dilling, Rachel Dornhelm, Marcy Fraser, Stephen Short, and Seth Samuel. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Angela Johnston. Our managing editor is Jen Sheehan. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. This music is by San Francisco trio Psychic Mind. They'll be playing at Neck of the Woods on Clement Street in San Francisco this Friday. You can expect to hear songs from their new album. Music starts at 9:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.